Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, my fine friends. It's Boxing Day. Yes, it's a tedious time of year coming up the next week. And here at Rahulastapa, stop saying that, you people over there. We are going to help you through the next few days by releasing some fantastic best of episodes from this year's Rahulastapa 2023. Ben Evans, not that one, the son of Chris Evans, not that one, has gone through every single podcast we've done this year to bring you the absolute chem de la chem of the funny stuff, the serious stuff, the bits that really worked. Let's face it, we should do it with every episode, but it's fun to put in the bits that don't work as well, isn't it? But imagine episodes with only the good bits, how good they're going to be. So today, tomorrow, the next day, and New Year's Day, you're going to get 5 best of shows with some of the greatest comedians and personalities in the United Kingdom that will do it for the money. Anyway, this is the first episode, and my first guest that we're going to meet in this episode is the marvellous Sarah Keyworth. If you were going to be put in a human centipede, but the person who was doing it was nice and said, I'll let you choose who's... you're in the middle. I'll let you choose who's on either end.
Do you think that's nice?
I think it's nicer than not letting you choose, isn't it?
I don't think I'd want the choice.
Okay.
If it's going to happen, just... send anyone in.
Okay.
Because then it's weird, isn't it? Like, if I pick a mate, we're not going to be friends after that, are we?
No.
So I can choose anyone?
You can choose anyone. One's in front, one's behind. So one, you're attached to... your mouth's attached to their anus and then someone behind you.
I presume most people, when answering this question, try and think of the person who would have the most... the cleanest, most nutritious shit.
They do. A lot of people do think about that. Who would that person be for you? Because, you know, I think all shit's pretty horrible.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying I've had good shit. I'm just trying to remember when the best shit I've eaten is.
It's a real sliding doors moment, this.
It is a sliding doors moment. I don't know. What have you eaten today?
I definitely wouldn't put me anywhere
You don't know what it's awful what's coming out of me.
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because you want to pick somebody clean, very relatively sort of clean eating in front of you, but then you can pick the worst person in the world. You can pick an enemy.
Exactly.
But would you want your enemy's mouth on your anus?
Yeah.
That's, you would.
That really would. That'd you be would. Exciting. Well, I'd like anyone's mouth on my anus at my age.
Yeah. And nobody's.
I'd like anybody's my mouth on my anus. No one's. I'm 55. No one's getting close to that anymore.
You don't want it sewn on, though, do you?
Well, it's something. It's some human contact.
Well, okay. Well, if you put it like that, I suppose, I don't know, because what you're thinking about is in terms of like quality. It's nice to just spend time with people, isn't it? Yes. I don't know, maybe a friend of mine I haven't seen in a few years or something. I got a mate that's living in Australia. So
yeah.
Perhaps shit in my mouth.
Are you just thinking in a way of saving some airfare to meet up? It's like surprise, surprise. But
yeah.
Well, you know, we haven't seen each other in a while. You can, the scientists will fly you over. There's one little catch.
It's a good excuse to spend some time together.
But we will be together. For free, we'll be together. Just the idea of, oh, but you know, come on over. Yeah, you will have your mouth attached to my anus.
Yes, what do you mean you're not coming? This is a great idea. Yeah. Also, because I know lots of people who, when they do sort of long-haul flights or go to different places, they don't ship for a few days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all right.
Get them up front.
I'll choose my friend who lives in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hoping they'll have...
And it'd be lovely
be
to see them.
Yeah. See them.
Yeah, ideally my constipated... My friend who's been on a long-haul flight who's only eaten the sort of horrible aeroplane food and things like that. Because also, you know, what really is that? That'll probably be still intact by the time it gets to me. Now you're disgusted.
I think at worst it'll just be like eating a cheese string that you haven't pulled the strings
off. Yes, that's true.
And then, do you think you'd be able to... If your mouth was sewn to your friend's anus... They'd obviously be able to talk because their mouth is through it. Do you think you'd be able to communicate? And do you think maybe that... Because I don't know whether you'd be able... It's hard to know, isn't it? But maybe just by...
They'd
the vibrations
it.
Would be enough to... Because, you know, like, if you put your fingers in your ear and talk, you can still hear yourself.
Like you're underwater, yeah. So do you think you're suggesting that they will be able to hear or sort of intuit what I'm saying...
I think it might just be like
through the vibrations up their anal cavity.
Yeah, I think it might be like two tins with a string in between.
Oh yeah, yeah, that would be. Yeah, I imagine so.
We've never gone this deep into this question before. I have to say.
Well, we have gone
mostly very deep. Most people just
pick a couple of names
and move on as quickly as possible. But it's much better by...
Are you sewn in for? Or is it
a, I mean, I think until permanent thing. I think it's until death or rescue.
Oh, right, OK.
You know, I don't think... I mean, right. I don't know, because you've still got your head... I mean, I've never seen the film. It sounds disgusting to me.
No,
it doesn't appeal to me.
It sounds unpleasant, yeah.
It is a very unpleasant idea. I wouldn't even like to talk about it, let alone watch.
Yeah.
But... If you got your arms, you got your hands free, presumably, you could just get some scissors and cut a bit of...
I can't imagine that.
If you had to free your mouth from the anus of your friend, would you cut off your lips or would you cut off their anus?
Well, I'd obviously cut off their anus.
Okay, yeah.
But then again, that's rude, isn't it? They've travelled all this way. I don't know, mate. It's maybe to do one of each. No, because then I'd still be...
Half an anus and half a lip. So you could have one a lower lip and a top lips and anus.
But then do I have to live the rest of my life with their anus on my lips?
I mean, that possibly, but probably the hospital would sort that out.
Oh, okay.
If you escape, you know. It's a hypothetical question in some way.
But it is worth thinking about.
It's
good to have a plan.
It's worth working out what you're going to do.
That was Sarah Keyworth. Coming up next, someone I once ate... pizza quite near in Shepherd's Bush, and a fantastic comedian. It is Rich Hall.
Do you think your obituary photo has already been taken, Rich Hall, or do you think it's yet to come? And what do you think seeing you're an obituary man, what do you think, which photo do you think they'll use in your obituary?
No.
If it's been taken.
Nah, I don't think it has.
No.
No.
You think the best is yet to come, is what you're saying, really, there?
No, no, I think they'll just go pull something off Google when I kick the bucket. It probably won't even be me. That's got to be embarrassing, right? They stick the wrong picture in your obituary photo.
Yeah.
You know, or even worse, Mo Sizlak. They could put that in there. They could put that in there in a second.
Yeah, I guess they will.
It'll be me and then Mo.
Yeah.
So God.
What is this? How did it end? How did Mo from The Simpsons end up with your face?
Okay. I'm not even exactly sure. I worked with Harry Shearer on Saturday Night Live, and he used to do a great impression of me. Right. But he could do impressions of a lot of people. And he would come around, and he would do an impression of me. I also worked with a couple other writers who went on to write a lot of Simpsons. But Harry doesn't do the Moe Sizlak voice. Is it Hank Azaria?
I think it is. Yeah.
I think that Harry Shearer just went, why don't you make it sound like Rich Hall? And he went, yeah, I could do Rich Hall, because Hank Azaria can do anybody, right? And so they just kind of ended up going, just make it sound like Rich Hall. You know, kind of Rich Hall. And somehow that, I also think there might be some physical resemblance. Possibly. A couple Halloweens ago, I went out as Mo with my kid, and it was pretty impressive. It was pretty good.
Yeah,
my kid painted me yellow, and I had a tray and the apron, and I walked around with the beer, you know.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it's a weird, because those cartoons will be shown. I think they'll probably still be going in 50 years' time, maybe. You know.
Yeah.
That whatever, you know, probably beyond the time that anyone's going to remember Rich Hall or anything Rich Hall did.
Yes.
50, 100 years' time. Hopefully some people
will remember. And again, if I cared about money, I'd be demanding a shitload of royalties for image likeness. But I don't care. I'm honored. Only because Mo's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah. You know?
He makes me laugh. He's also based, actually, on Red's Bar, which was a tavern in New Jersey. All that... that old joke, Red would get these calls from people going, hey, I'm looking for Amanda. Who? Amanda. Amanda, hug me? And he fell for it. These tapes exist.
Right.
You can find them. And he'd fall for it every time, Red.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Amanda, hug me. Oh, you son of a bitch. I'll kill you. I'll rip your liver out. That it's kind of a combination of those two things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's Ben Moore, who's a fantastic English sort of performance comedian, actor. But the film Arthur Christmas, which you're actually also in as a voice, is based on him as a young man. They took a photo of him as a young man and mate, and Arthur Christmas is him as a young man.
Really?
But he never got paid. I mean, I keep on saying to him, they should have paid you for that. Because they've taken your image and they've used you. But I think, again, he sees it as being just a nice thing to happen.
Yeah.
But that's an odd... I mean, that's going to be a big... You know, that's a big thing. People taking people's image and doing other things with it. It's going to... You know, probably this might not happen to you, Rich, but they can put you in porn films and things now. So someone could take that image and put you in a porn film against your will. So that's a big question, isn't it? Ethical question.
You mean now in my current...
Yeah, they could take...
That's scary. A younger Rich Hall, I wouldn't mind seeing. Yeah,
yeah.
They could sort of image me in a younger. I could enjoy that vicariously.
Yeah. Well, that might be. That might all be part of it.
Yeah, both of us. I would have seen myself in a porn film 30 years ago. Fuck yeah! Wow. Oh God, my feet. You know what? My feet would be dirty. Remember early porn? They fucking didn't wash their feet. That really ruined it for me. There's a lot of dirty feet in the early days of porn. And you just go, oh, man, I'm trying to follow the plot, but fucking...
That was Rich Hall. Now let's hear from the brilliant Sakisa.
So, Sakisa.
Yes.
It's there's a lot of things about your name. Sakisa is quite an unusual name. Is it only you that's got that name?
There is only me with this very weird name. I've Googled it. I've looked it up. If you try and Google my name, weird words come up around it. No one has this name. I have no idea. My mom basically told me that she found my name in a book about African kings and queens. And I asked her what was the name of the book. And she doesn't remember. And she can't find it. And that doesn't help my cause. And I generally feel like she made it up. I feel like she made it up in a game of Scrabble. That's why I feel like she was like, words, does that make a good point? But when I tell people my name, especially people that are originated from Africa, they tell me it means different things in their language.
Okay.
So apparently, like, my mum tells me that it means faithful. Someone told me it means blessed. Someone else shouted at me or heckled me during a show when I said my name and said it means pussy in my language. I was like, that doesn't help my cause. So, yeah, it's a very unique name, but obviously no one has this name, so I'm very original on the circuit, if you want to call it.
And then you can go by one name, which is a fantastic thing.
Yeah. Which is what I really love. People are always like, why don't you not use your surname? I'm like, it's too fucking long. It's a double barrel name, and everyone messes up with my first name anyway.
Yeah.
So then having to deal with the rest of my surname is just like, oh, we don't need to do that. Well, and also, like, I grew up watching, like, I always wanted to be like a little, like, music video person, wanted to be a pop star. So yeah. I always wanted to be like Beyonce and like Britney Spears and Janet Jackson. So my thing was like, let's just have one name, like Madonna and stuff like that, and just be like the star. So yeah.
It's a fantastic showbiz name. But you also go by the name Twix.
I go by the name Twix. A lot of my comic friends still call me Twix, which was the name I started out on the circuit on, because Sakisa was a unique name, people are going to mess it up. So I just didn't want to hassle. Okay. So I just started calling myself Twix, like the chocolate, which is a nickname I got in law school, along with a few other friends that I met at law school, including my best friend. And they all have nicknames because our tutor told us we kept bringing... So we wasn't paying attention in law school. and we kept bringing in chocolates every day to law school. And our tutor just said to us, why don't you just call yourself the Chocolate Girls?
Wow.
For those of you who are listening, I am black. and so are my two other friends. And I don't think she meant it in that kind of racist way. And there was also like another girl who was white.
Yeah, this white chocolate this as well,
white
though.
White chocolate. So we all named ourselves like a chocolate that represents us.
Okay.
And it was a problem with the white girl. Because we didn't know what to call her, because there's not really many chocolates that are decent, that are white.
Okay.
That sounds really bad on this podcast.
Yeah. I can't believe you've gotten so racist again. What's wrong with the Milky Bar?
Well, her boyfriend was called Milky Bar, so we could call herself Milky Bar. So I'm called Twix because I'm a Gemini.
Okay, there's two.
Yes, Gemini's in the house. Yes, we are the best, even though we're crazy. So Twix because I'm a Gemini.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say that I'm not called Twix because I like two fingers.
Yeah.
I prefer a Kit Kat. And I don't like to take breaks. Yeah. And it's just a nice way for people to remember me. My best friend is called Snickers because she likes chocolate-covered nuts. And then my other friend is called Cadbury's Caramel. So we all named each other after a chocolate that represents us. And they both have babies, so we now have got, like, baby, like mini, like...
Yeah, fun-size.
Fun-size celebrities, yes.
I'm trying to work out what I would... I eat a lot... When I'm eating chocolate, I'm trying to stop eating it because I can't stop eating it, so I have to stop eating it.
What would be your chocolate choice?
I eat a lot of giant chocolate Cadbury buttons, the giant ones.
Why?
Because that's what the kids have and that's all that's in the house. So
oh,
I just
is
eat
it? They're very...
So I eat all their chocolate is what I'm saying.
Well, they're just very, like, big, but also just, like, chocolate. Yeah. Like, there's nothing special about it. And I can't call you buttons. That just sounds really weird.
Giant buttons.
Giant buttons. That sounds even weirder.
It might have to be giant button now after what I've been through. So,
You can't do it. It's not even worse.
So Kisa there, and another very fine comedian to follow her. It's Paul Chowdhury.
What's the worst experience you've ever had in a hotel? There must be a lot of bad hotels.
Oh, yeah.
What's the worst thing that's
happened? I actually filmed the hotels and put them online.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, I've walked in the... but this tour, there's so many. If you asked me this earlier, I would try and pick one.
Yeah.
One time I remember they went to the toilet and then I shut the lid and the whole toilet just exploded.
Oh, wow.
The porcelain just smashed.
Right.
And then there was just water all over the floor, and then you'd call went to reception that it's broken. They said, we'll sort it out after you check out.
Right.
So you got to then, you know...
work around the...
just use the floor.
That's pretty bad. When you tour, what kind of level of hotels are you staying in?
Oh, one star.
Yeah? Could you keep it cheap on the...
Yeah, one
even
star.
When you're selling out these big venues, you think I'm going to go...
Never be a sellout.
Right.
You sell out rooms, but don't be a sellout.
Okay.
So that's the trick, is it keeps you humble.
Yeah.
So you remain in... I've stayed in the biggest shitholes in England because you want to stay true to your craft. I'm like... who's that guy that Johnny Depp played in that? Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
I take that approach to my comedy.
I was going to say Willy Wonka. I was going to be my guess. I'm glad it wasn't. I'll only live in a massive chocolate factory. I find the massive chocolate factory in every town, and that's where I stay. And if there are no Oompa Loompas, I'm out.
So I take the Hunter S. Thompson approach to, yeah. You know, I keep it real. I stay in places that are haunted. You know, shit stains on the bed sheets. Yeah. Generally...
I mean, that's after you've been in there, though, right? I'll keep it real by wiping my ass in the bed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're dirty places, hotels. They can't. Oh. They're going to be dirty anyway, even if they...
filth.
Even if they make an effort to clean them, there's stuff that's happened. Every hotel room you've been in, something disgusting has happened.
Even when you call the local working individual to your room.
Yeah.
Because you can't use the other terms now. It was working person. To your room, and then they see the room, they're like, fuck, they assign staying in. It's like the film Mona Lisa with Bob Hoskins and Kathy Tyson.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
I don't think the reference is too old for this.
It's a long way back. That's where you give away your age. Yeah. You know, you look young, and then suddenly referencing very old movies.
That's why I stay in shitholes.
Yeah, to stay in touch.
To stay in touch with the people.
Yeah.
When you go downstairs and you go to reception, you see the drunk, degenerate human beings that you think the most depraved dregs of society are in that hotel. And then you go and do the show in the evening and they're in the front row. That's why I do it. You know, I want to stay real.
I know. I used to stay in some very, very bad hotels. And you just come to the point where you're slightly afraid for your life, though, if you stay.
That's what I like. And I like taking the tour manager there.
Yeah.
And you know, the tour manager is somebody who drives you, and he says, and they're in the same hotel as me. Some people put them in the shitholes, and then the act stays in the.
I don't think it's better for the tour manager if you stay in the shit. That's not going. Oh yeah, Paul Chowdhury's great. He put me in the shit hotel, but he stayed there as well.
Yeah.
What they want is to go. I've toured with Richard Herring. He put me in a nice hotel with him. They don't want to go. They don't think you're the great guy. They think I'm the great guy. It's the guy who goes to the nice hotel and puts the tour manager in the shithole. It's no different for the tour manager if he's in the shithole and you're in the shithole. He's still in the shithole.
Yep, we're sharing a room.
That really saves some money.
It saves a lot of money if you get
two people in one room, 15 quid a night. What's the lowest you've paid for 15 quid a night's the lowest I've paid for bed and breakfast?
Yes, 50 quid last week.
15.
Oh, 15 quid?
Yeah.
What was that in 1932?
It was probably 14 years ago, and there was nowhere else available. My car broke down and I had to stay in Lincoln, I think, and I got a room above a pub, and the door had recently been kicked in and not really been mended, and the bed was horrible, and there was just noise shouting from other rooms all night long. I didn't. I didn't even take the breakfast. I just got out as soon
as... Was this a hotel or an asylum?
I mean, it was like an asylum, but it was only 15 quid, and I didn't get killed or raped.
It's worth it, then. Can you give me the details?
Yeah, I'll give you a message. And I stayed... probably the famous hotel in Swansea that I didn't end up staying in because I managed to get a lift home, where the toilet was in the same room as the bed.
Oh.
I think that was about £20.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's, yeah.
I mean, it's all right if you're on your own to just have the toilet. You know, it's romantic if you go to a hotel and the bath's in the bedroom, but yeah, it's not so romantic if the toilet's in the... just it was in, like, an alcove, but it didn't have a door on it, that sort of stuff.
But some hotels, the toilet is the bath.
Yeah.
So you can use it for both situations.
I mean, everything in any hotel room has been used as a toilet.
Yeah.
At some point. So but the bath has... The kettle has definitely been used as a toilet. Definitely has. The Nespresso machine has been used as a toilet.
Well, I did a tour date recently, and Johnny Rotten was in the same room. And
right.
I opened the kettle, and it was all bits of tea bag in the kettle. Because I'm like, what's happened to the kettle? And they said, oh, Johnny Rotten was here yesterday. So he puts the tea bag in the kettle and boils the water.
Right. So he uses the kettle as a teapot.
As a teapot. Because he's a sex, you know, like...
He is, that's the kind of thing the Sex Pistols...
Yeah, and that's rock and roll when he's 70.
Yeah.
He was the Antichrist back then. And he'd used the F word in a mainstream interview. It was just controversial. Now it's tea bags in...
I mean, that is worse than the F word, for my opinion.
Yeah, I was very offended by that.
It's also like the tea's going to be horrible, isn't it? If you boil it with the tea...
Well, that's...
It's got to be boiling water you put the tea bag in. You can't boil the water from cold.
No.
With the tea bag in it.
That's what he did.
Fucking idiot. I'd have had him on the show, but I'm not going to do it.
But he does a Q&A thing now.
Right.
So it's not music. It's a little jump goes into, like, Marty Pello. Everyone's doing these tours now, aren't they? Where they're not actually doing their act. They're just talking about their careers.
Yeah.
Which no one gives a shit about.
It's a bit like...
It's like this.
Yeah. A bit like this.
Lovely Paul Chowdhury. You don't hear that said about him very often. And we're now coming up to some adverts. These people have helped pay for the podcast during the year, meaning we can keep making more podcasts. So do listen to these ads. While we're doing ads, do remember to come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/Rahulastapa if you want to see Rahulastapa in 2024. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour if you want to see my return to stand-up after 5 or 6 years, depending on which way you look at it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thank you to our advertisers. Next coming up, the daughter of the woman that I am going to marry. It's Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
The first thing I say, your first band was called The Audience, which I don't really want to talk about much beyond. It's really confusing in the book, even though...
What, calling it The Audience?
Well, because it's called The Audience and you keep saying, I was in The Audience. You go, what? Why were you in The
you
Audience?
You know what? I knew that was stupid at the time.
Yeah.
I knew it, but, you know, there were like five of us, so...
I mean, I love it because it's exactly like a sort of teenage, hey, we're the band, but let's call... Like, we're all part of the... So we're not better than The Audience. Let's call ourselves The Audience. Won't it be confusing when we say
no,
The Audience?
It was worse than that, Richard, because it was actually The Audience spelled all one word. So people were like, Theo Udience? I mean, it was just, it was stupid. I do think if you're going to call anything, it shouldn't really need like an explanation before you say the name or after, should it?
No.
It should just be. And
I mean, even though you explained the book, when I listened to the audiobook, every time it comes up, I was still confused.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's all right.
No,
sorry.
It's good. And then it made me
Maybe
laugh
I
every
sung
time.
It. The audience, just something just to like jolt you out of that.
No, it's good. It was funny. But the story of you, it's one of those. It's like a sliding doors moment, isn't it, with your dad, Peter Howitt? you getting the CD, and because you sort of saw yourself as an indie performer and weren't interested in working with the
dance music
the
at
dance
all.
Music.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, now we're really used to the fact that people can, you know, hop between different genres. That's completely normal. But in the 90s, things were not this way. You know, you nailed your colours to that mast, and I was very much an indie kid. You know, Melody Maker, Enemy every week, knew all those bands. They were all over my wall in my bedroom. So when the band...
Yeah.
split the audience when they split up. I was high and dry, but the idea of moving into a different genre just wasn't in my head at all.
Yeah.
So when I was sent this instrumental track with a view to potentially singing on it, I was actually insulted. I was quite insulted. I'm an indie kid. Why on earth you sent me a dance track? And also that was like a different world, like the house scene. That was just breaking out into being more mainstream. That was still something that was mainly people going to Ibiza and... You know, that was where it was. And so it was all a completely, like, new world opened up once I said, actually, you know what, I'm going to do this track because there's something about it I like and I think maybe it's good for me to do something that's other and it'll just be my own thing and the music press on that side of it won't even know I've done it. I'll just go and do it for me. And then it just took me on this incredible ride, showing me a whole new landscape.
And you threw the CD, the bit in the book you talk about, you listened to the CD and you threw it across the room because you weren't interested and then found it later and thought, oh, I'll have another listen.
Well, I didn't remember what it was. It was blank. So I was tidying up and I just found this CD. I'm like, what's that? And I put it in and I thought, actually, there's something I quite like, actually.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, there's in the Beatles story, there's this moment of where Paul McCartney, where they come back from Hamburg and Paul McCartney goes back to his job and then gets offered a promotion. But then the other Beatles, they haven't performed together a bit, and they say, we're doing a lunchtime show at the Cavern, but you'll have to quit your job to come and do it. And I often wonder about the universe where Paul McCartney decides he'll take the promotion.
Oh, yeah.
And how different... And I'm not saying that
your
music... I'm not saying your music has been as influential as Paul McCartney's. But
no,
if you
didn't
even
remember what it was called at the beginning.
But if you hadn't picked up that CD a second time,
yes.
Do you think... I think that song was so instrumental in sort of the direction you were going to go in anyway.
Maybe Groove Jet is my promotion. Maybe I should have kept it in the bin.
Maybe.
Who knows what would have happened in the universe.
Imagine that. Let's imagine that world. Let's imagine the world where Paul McCartney took the job. I'm absolutely fascinated by things like that.
Yeah, you do have like moments that are really pivotal. Yeah. And everything changed with that song. So it's the song that taught me the most. And before it was even a hit, actually, before it even did well, it was already really significant to me because it was about a change in my mindset as well of just thinking, actually, I'm the person who's making the rules here. So if I want to do that song, I can completely do that song. And just having this adventurous way from things. And like when the song came out, my manager at the time said, oh, I wish you all the best, but I can't manage you anymore. So actually when it charted, I didn't have a manager. I didn't have a record label. So it was kind of... crazy and really stressful, but also really exciting because it was just brilliant to be doing something again and have this momentum and to think, next?
You sort of had a chart battle against Posh Spice.
Yes. It's so funny to think of that now. Yeah, that was crazy intense. Wow. So basically, Victoria Beckham was the last of the Spice Girls to release a solo single and all of the others had number ones. So there was a lot of pressure on Victoria to have a number one with this song called Out of Your Mind that she did with Dane Bowers.
Yes.
Yes.
And you beat her.
Well, the song did better, yeah. But it was really crazy, actually, because the song All Week in the Midweeks was behind her song. Oh, it's the True Steppers, that's right. True Steppers and Dane Bowers, who did the song with. And all week we were behind them, and it was getting closer and closer till on the last midweek there was only 500 sales between them being number one and Spiller and I at number two. And then it went quiet on the Saturday, and I thought, oh, maybe I should just pop to Woolworths and buy it. What if there's only one single in it, and it was, and I'm the one? And I thought, no, I can't do it. I've never bought my own music. I'm not going to start now. And I went home. And then the next day, we'd sold 20,000 more copies on that Saturday, which is bonkers. And it was really exciting. And because I'd come from a band that had been dropped and, you know, being high and dry, I just really tried to take everything in, because I knew at the time, like, that doesn't happen very often in anyone's life. So I was like, okay. Yeah. Try and remember it all.
Lovely to get Sophie on, of course. Even more lovely, perhaps, to see the return of someone we thought would never come back, the marvellous Stephen Merchant.
Will you please welcome the incredible Stephen Merchant, ladies and gentlemen. Stephen Merchant. Thank you. Come in. Pick up there's a mic. Ah, beautiful. Stephen Merchant.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming. I think everyone wants to thank you for coming back.
Well, we're already off to a good start. You didn't introduce me as a paedophile. So that's a win as far as I'm concerned.
That's one up.
What's that, sir?
It's one up, isn't it?
Yeah,
I want to apologise. I was a very immature, young, 46-year-old man when you last came on. And now I am 55 and I'm a lot more mature.
Yeah,
I did a podcast recently with Sally Phillips, who I used to go out with, and we split up, and it was a little bit difficult. And then she came and did a podcast, and it was a reconciliation.
Oh, so that's nice.
So I'm hoping that this will,
yeah,
be similar.
Why did you and Sally break up? Did you call her a paedophile and then and then insult some of her work and generally make the atmosphere strange, or?
Pretty much. It's pretty much.
Can I ask you what your perception is of our last encounter? Because I'm interested to know what your take is.
Well, I was...
Because I've never listened to it, so I don't have an objective opinion. I only have a sense memory of it.
Yeah. We did cut some bits out, Rich Steve.
Oh, yeah. Did you? Right. You cut out the awkward stuff, so it's about 4 minutes long. So what is your memory of it? You seem to be... Why are you evading the question?
I that night, very unusually, we recorded two podcasts in the same night. And Simon Pegg was the other guest, you may remember. It was quite a big deal. We had two big Hollywood superstars. Yeah. I'm being nice. One of whom... No. And I was really worried about upsetting Simon because I thought he, you know, you and I spent a bit of time at gigs and stuff. And I hadn't seen Simon for a while. And I was worried about being inappropriate with him.
Yeah.
And so I'd concentrate really hard on being good with him. And then you came on and I don't know what happened. I kind of lost my mind a little bit.
That's it, is it?
Yeah.
That's the apology, is it?
There was also a joke I think you took the wrong way that I meant to, as a joke against myself, which I think that was one of the moments it turned a bit.
Let me tell you.
You're just trying to bring it up again, and so we have.
Let me tell you my perception.
Yeah, okay, you give me your perception.
My feeling was that I had gone back to stand-up comedy after a long time, and and you were very, very supportive in that, and I saw you on the comedy scene, and you were very helpful, and you even had lunch with me one time, and you gave me lots of good tips and clubs to try out material and things like that. And then you said, would you come down and do my podcast? And I had nothing to promote, and I had no reason to come other than being, you know, thanking you, in a sense, for your generous help with the return to stand-up. And so I, you know, tooled down, thinking this will be a nice, fun showbiz chat. And then you just went really weird. and sort of, it was odd. And then I think you were, then we came off and you sensed that there was an energy. And then you said, oh, sometimes when I'm on stage, I play a character. And I thought, oh, do you fucking Ali G? Because you didn't mention it to me beforehand. And this character's very similar to you. No funny voices. So, inevitably, it was a strange encounter.
It was a strange encounter. For I felt very bad. I don't like to upset guests. Well, it's happened a couple of times. We might talk about one of the other guests later. But I felt very bad for about a week, and then I got over it. That's fine. Are we going to be okay for the rest of this one?
Oh, listen, please. I haven't thought about it since. So, which of my projects do you want to slag off to start with, or do you?
Stephen Merchant there, he came back with mainly good grace. I love to see him again. As it was to see another one of my favourite comedians, the terrific Fern Brady.
So a lot of autistic girls, they don't get diagnosed because their teachers just think they're clever. And then any weird little things that they do, that's just them being eccentric and clever. So I did a lot of odd things when from early on that was like, really obviously autistic stuff. Like, I didn't want to be friends with anyone in the playground. I was best friends with a tree. My mum has like drawings of me like patting the tree, talking to it and stuff. Like, I just wasn't interested in other children. But the school thought that it meant I was a genius, and they put me into this like child genius class that was 2 years above the class I was meant to be in. And on my first day, they asked me the difference between a vowel and a consonant, and I just shat myself in my seat. And then after that, it was back in with the plebs. And my parents never really got over that. They were always like saying, "You're supposed to be clever." There was another time they were going on about how clever I was, and then they said I just picked up a big... In Scotland, you used to get buckets of jam. If there's any Scottish people in, can you back me up on this? Because it sounds mad. I got the bucket of jam at the breakfast table and I just tipped it over my head. And my parents were like, why is she doing things like that? So I do a lot of that in silence and yet wasn't diagnosed autistic. But if there's any autistics in the audience, I don't want you to think I'm saying that's an autistic trait, is putting jam on your head. Oh, I'm making a balls of this. Listen, they gave me media training last week at the publishers. And I tried to listen back to a recording before I came here, but the recording's not working, so that's why I'm coming out with all this.
It's very good, and you be you, because that's what I think is important about this book. And there's a lot of things that are important about it. I think I'd really recommend it because it is... You know, it's an important way to understand a bit about autism. I think people will identify with elements of that because there are elements that everyone has of social awkwardness and making mistakes but there's so much more to it in terms of the violence of it. You know, the episodes you have where you're smashing your own kitchen up because you're frustrated or. Overstimulated.
Yeah, that was how I got. Well, that was the worst bit to write about. When I was writing that, I was like, this is really going to stop me from ever getting to host This Morning. the way I got diagnosed was I was having meltdowns because I was working really hard to cover my autistic traits when I was out and about at work. So, like, I hate hugging people, but if you don't hug TV producers, then they won't book you for stuff. Or like a lot of the time people want to like kiss you on the cheeks at work meetings and I'd sort of flinch. So I started covering up all the things I was uncomfortable with. And then I was like, I don't know why as soon as I get home from meetings, I just start punching a cupboard. and then when I got diagnosed, I found out that those two things were linked and I had to stop masking my autistic traits to... But otherwise, I would have a very stressful life. There was another thing I was going to say to you.
Yeah.
As you were talking there. Oh, God, it's gone. It's gone. Oh, yeah. So I don't want any... Like, because a lot of you are like,
What's this got to do with me? I'm not autistic. I'm not interested in this at all. I did also write it just for anyone interested in communication or being socially awkward. I'm pretty obsessed with outsiders. So pretty much like all the way through the book, you've got settings where outsiders are, like when I was in the mental unit, then when I was in the strip club, and then comedy. Yeah. It's like the best place for being around other mentally ill people.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, it's difficult to do other jobs for all these reasons. But then when you found comedy, not only did it feel right for you and amazing for you, but you are like amongst your peers. It's why I love being a comedian, because it is, you know, there's a lot of different types of people, but there's something about comedians where we all kind of understand each other in general, I think, and recognise each other, and it's a safe space to have. I mean, it's ideal for a comedian because a comedian has to be observing the world and be honest about the world, and that's what you're able to do.
Yeah,
is to really spot where things are, you know, things that make you angry, things that make you upset, things that are just stupid. You can just say what you see.
That's the thing. People treat honesty like it's a magic trick, and I think in England as well, because a lot of people I know that aren't from England and come and live here say this, like, English people communicate in a very indirect way, and that can be confusing if you like to be direct with people, because it then means your directness is taken as rudeness over and over again. So that's not even an autistic thing. That's just like something that happens from living here. I've always been really interested in communicating as effectively as possible. Like, I did journalism before I went into comedy, and when we were getting trained up for that, they used to teach us how to write really boring news stories to appeal to a Sun reader. And that was a really good skill to have going into comedy, because sometimes you want to communicate quite a complex thing in the form of a joke. As I'm saying that, I'm just thinking of like all the dumb jokes I've done about cum and like boobs and stuff. And that's what I do in my comedy. But, so I've always been interested in how to communicate really clearly and effectively. So then it's weird to get told that you're the one with disordered communication, because there's a lot of pathologizing of autism, and I don't think it should be seen that way. I think it should just be seen in quite neutral terms.
That was Fern Brady. Now coming up, he's cheeky little chappy, Josh Widdicombe.
My favourite bit was what you took to hospital when your first child was born. You took something with you. Do you remember what it was? In the hope of...
Was it Great Expectations?
It was the Book of Great Expectations.
Yeah, I haven't got any further with it.
That you've never read before, and you thought the time to get into Great Expectations.
I thought there'd be a lot of breastfeeding.
It wasn't even for the waiting. There might have been a bit of waiting around before the baby was born, but once the baby's born, you can't start reading a book.
What else are you going to do?
Help with the go. Oh
no, but the, I thought. I know that now. No. I know that now. But at the time, I thought the first 5 years would be a lot of kind of daytime TV and TV and tea and biscuits and stuff.
Time to catch up on
Great Expectations, which I've read the first 10 pages of. It's shit. Do you like it?
I studied for O-level. Well, I'm going to... proper O-level.
Yeah.
And I did quite like it, and I'm going to recommend, if you really want to have a go at it...
Is there an abridged version?
No, there's an Audible audiobook.
Oh, here we go.
I love Audible. Read by Martin Jarvis from Rings on Their Fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Apart from one of the Jewish characters, which is a bit questionable, he's extremely good.
Oh, God.
It's an extremely good reading of it.
Okay.
So give that a go with one of your Audible credits.
Currently... Reading an Audible book that is 40... Well, not reading, listening to an Audible book that's 42 hours long.
Oh, is it The History of the World?
No, get this.
Okay. There was Simon's...
No, that's... So it's the opposite of The History of the World.
Right.
So that is something you'd allow 42 hours for.
Yeah.
It is a history of the United Kingdom from 1979 to 1982.
Love those early Thatcher years. Want to catch up?
Yeah,
on.
But she comes and goes. There's a lot of other stuff as well. I'm currently 6 hours in. It is good.
Wow, okay.
I listened to that.
That's a book about 3 years.
79, 80, 81, 82, 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. it's...
How can they make that 40 hours? That's like, you might as well just relive those 4 years.
I'm still 25 hours off the Falklands War. Because I listened to that history podcast, The Rest is History.
Yeah.
And one of them wrote it, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. I downloaded it without looking at the running time. It's 900 pages in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a... Anyway, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's why you can't use up your Audible credits. Yeah. That's, no one get through that many. What was I going
to
say?
I tried Spare on Audible. Did you listen to Spare?
No.
Is he not done your book club?
I haven't. I thought I probably couldn't get Prince Harry after what I've said about his uncle.
He doesn't like him.
Does he not?
Well, I don't know.
Have you listened to it?
I gave up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's tough going. There's a bit where he sings your song that is flabbergasting.
I've heard that bit. Someone put that on Twitter. Yeah, I did hear
that. I'm not on Twitter, so that was fresh. Yeah, but I gave up because there was five chapters in a row about learning to fly an Apache helicopter.
Okay.
Fuck off. No one is here for that. It's like, turns into Bravo 2-0 and I was out.
Right. Well, you know. He killed, was 25, is it? How many did he, what was his count?
25
Taliban
fighters.
Good, you know. Well,
but as Marina Hyde, right? But they still won.
Yeah, that's true. I chose the book that I chose that I thought I had an outside chance of getting on.
Yeah.
Was Matthew Perry's autobiography.
Oh, yeah, have you listened
to that?
Which
I think is similarly probably written by someone who isn't very self-aware.
I would say... I'd love to have a discussion with you about that when we're not being recorded and put online. Because I found his repetition that he was one of the funniest men in the world difficult to deal with. Particularly considering how unfunny the fucking book was.
But it's worth listening to again. I mean, you don't know when you write your own books. You don't know how self-aware you are. You hope you're self-aware, but then you read some books and you go, "This person does not know how they come across from their own book."
Yeah, yeah.
I often write books that I'm trying to make myself look bad, so I think that's different than most people write them.
Yeah. I don't know what to say here because that would, if I said, "So you are quite self-aware," that would look awful. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? And then you have to do the audiobook, and that's very confronting,
yeah.
I think. And I've heard a couple of stories about people I won't name who had their books ghostwritten.
Yes.
And then got into the audiobook reading and went, oh, God, this is shit. One of the people who's very well respected and another who's not.
Right.
But the one who's not's a lovely bloke.
Yeah.
And the one who's well respected isn't. So there's something for everyone in those anecdotes, I tell you.
He's never off the TV, is he, Josh Widdicombe? And there he was on my podcast too. And someone else who's never off my podcast. We took years to get him on, and now we can't get rid of him. It's the monkey himself, Little Tim Key.
Do you think that might be true? How do we ever know for sure that the other people really exist?
Well, how do we know that we exist? It might be that they all exist and we don't.
That could be true.
Yeah.
Do you think, I was talking to Josh Widdicombe about this backstage, that it just seems like unlikely that we would be alive at this particular time and place in humanity and in the broad sweep of things. It's a very nice time to be alive despite everything. Okay. Do you think we're living in a simulation and we're not real?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
You're certainly treating this interview like nothing matters.
You know what Federer says?
What?
If you can play as if it means nothing when it means everything,
yeah,
then you're onto something. I think it was Federer, and it might not be his exact quote. AI have... there's a robot making poems that are my poems.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are they as good as yours?
Oh, I mean, I'd love to say no. There's a robot doing it.
Is it?
Yeah.
And can people tell the difference?
Richard. They're really similar to my poems.
What I'm sure of is no AI could write a Tim Key the Monkey script. That is all I know. That you need a human being to do that.
I think that that's the AI machine's warm-up writing those things. A man came up to me in the bar after a gig and said, yeah, I've made a robot. And he writes poems. And they're your poems. And I said, how have you done that? And he said, I've inputted all of your poems that you've published. And I go, well, go on then, let me see one. And he showed it to me, and I'm like looking at it pretty much in tears, just thinking, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
They're better, they've got more punch to them.
Right. It's going to be interesting when, you know...
Well, listen, you're talking to someone who went in my cafe last week, my local cafe. I was sat next to pretty much the worst combination of people you'll ever find. Someone from Netflix and a nerd. And the nerd is explaining his new bit of software.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're talking about... I mean, I don't know. These people are talking about getting machines to write... you know, shows, and then loads of shows, and then give them to people to read and go, yeah, probably make that one properly. That's what they're doing. Well, I think they're doing. I mean, I was like two tables away.
The good thing is that the people who decide which scripts are made will also eventually be replaced by robots making that decision.
That's the good thing, yeah.
So that's the reassuring thing. So those people also lose their jobs.
Do you think you could be replaced with a robot?
I don't. I think what I do is too... It's just too special.
It's just too human.
It's too...
You are a very human interviewer.
I am. I don't think a robot could have this level of incompetence. You can't program that in.
No. Do you have any... Who are your favourite interviewers that you look up to?
I like, you know, Adam Buxton.
I like Adam, yeah.
I like Adam Buxton. Yeah. I like Michael Parkinson when he's not being sexist. So. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's not that much of Michael Parkinson left, but the bits that are left are good.
How sexist is he? I mean, you not did very. The stuff about the lady living inside a burrow inside another lady.
I don't think that's sexist.
Is that one of his?
That's not sexist. That's very inclusive. He was
sexy.
Yeah. He interviewed Helen Mirren about her too.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Well, I don't remember it, but I've seen it on YouTube. Yeah.
I haven't interviewed you about your balls. I've interviewed you about my balls. That's how unsexist I am.
I know. That's the beauty of you as an interviewer. Yeah. It's very rare that you don't frame at least a couple of questions around your bollock.
It's an interesting happening. It's nice when something interesting happens to you, isn't it, Tim?
The cancer?
Yeah, cancer. Right,
yeah. Yeah, it is
I
nice.
I felt alive, you know, happened. I felt alive. There was if you have kids as well, I've just spent years with kids, family, and then something fucking interesting happens to me. Someone cut my bollock off.
Yeah.
I felt alive.
Have you written a book about it?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
What's that called?
It's called Can I Have My Ball Back?
That's it, yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to read that.
You should.
I've got your other one.
Have you? Which other one have you got?
The other book you wrote.
Okay.
You're on a bike on the front of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, How Not to Grow Up.
How Not to Grow Up, yeah.
Yeah, that's from that's when I was 40.
Yeah. Not 40 anymore, are you, Richard?
Oh, nearly 56.
56 now?
Yeah. It's all passing by.
56, what do you reckon? Another 25?
I'd be happy. When 2 years ago, I thought, the call comes in, you think, oh, maybe I've got like 2 months to live or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of this time is bonus time, Tim. Even this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bonus time that I'm wasting.
Yeah.
But
what's your favourite way of spending time?
I'm just spending some time to think about what my favourite spending time. I like doing. I like this. I like stuff like this when where people are on stage.
I like this.
And you don't know what's going to happen next.
It is nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was looking forward to it when I was walking here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We'll get you a cab next time.
I like walking.
Okay.
I do 15,000 steps a day.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's good.
Tim Key the Monkey, making us laugh, as will the marvellous Zoe Lyons.
You talk about in your previous show I was watching on Next Up. The entry level human, which is a great, great show. But you talk about getting older and becoming sort of more independent. There's a very funny routine about about why Brexit's happened is because people just get older and
want to be separate. Move away from other people. Yeah. Other people are horrific.
Which is worth watching. But I think you just do, you know, like I remember being in my 20s and the idea, you know, if I was like, sometimes occasionally I'd go on holiday on my own because it was the only time I could get away. And I was too scared to go into restaurants on my own for the fear of looking...
Yeah, like, I think that is a thing that comes with a bit of age. Yeah, you literally don't give a shit anymore. Just don't give a shit. I'd sit there with food all around my face going, fuck it, I'm 50-odd. It doesn't matter, does it? We were talking about this backstage. I love going to a museum or an arboretum. I mean, I happily wander around trees on my own. I'll, you know, piss about in my anorak. I'm a lesbian. I love it. I'm in my natural habitat. I'm in sort of, you know, waterproof clothing and a sturdy boot, just looking at a giant redwood, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird existence, I think, anyway, as a stand-up, and the whole touring thing is, you know, even if you're with a support act and a tour manager, it's sort of still very lonely, and you've got this weird end of day thing where, or you know, in the middle of the evening where you're the centre of attention and a few hundred people around you, and then you go back.
I know, it is really odd, isn't it? Yeah. I was in Newcastle last week, and I was walking down one of the main streets in Newcastle, and Alan Carr walked towards me, and I went, Alan, and he went, Zoe, I went, what are you doing here? He went, Grimsby, I'm in Grimsby tonight. And he said, I'd rather walk around Newcastle. And so we'd driven to Newcastle to avoid walking around Grimsby. But we both had that slight mad look in our eyes and people were like, oh, somebody I know, you know. Because, it's really lonely. It just does get very lonely. I think the trick is to sort of break it, not do too many in a week.
Yeah.
So three or four maximo. Otherwise, you go absolute feral.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think it is, you know, this was something we were talking about backstage, but I think it just is, the travel is so... wearing and you know, like as you get older. And when I was thinking about it, when you started 20 years ago or so, and when we were younger, in our 30s, you would sort of drive to Yorkshire and back and not think about it.
And now it's, mind you, I did drive back from Cardigan in Wales last night and got home at 3 a.m. And I get this sort of, I finished the show and I thought, there was a hotel there for me, and I thought, I could go now and get home by 3. And I sort of clamped onto the steering wheel like an insane praying mantis. And I was like, I'm going to fucking do this. I'm going to do it. And I had my sandwich, my crisps. And, yeah, made it. But, like one eye popped at one point. You lose an eye. But just to wake up in the morning in your own bed.
Don't you, on those long drives, though, I always get to a point where I think I've died.
Yeah,
and this is hell. Yeah. I'm just going to be driving.
Yeah,
generally through Wales. It's usually in Wales, so I'll just be driving through Wales, and that's what the afterlife is.
Yeah, that's it forever,
forever,
perpetually driving through Wales. And I saw a badger at one point last night. That was there, and you're like, was that a badger or was it a werewolf? What is going on? And there was parts of the journey, because have you ever been to Cardigan? There's a beautiful art centre there, but it really is quite a long way away. And the first sort of 50 miles of the drive back is, you know, through the Welsh countryside. Yeah. And I've got quite an overactive imagination, thus the job that I do. And at some point, you know, it was like 11 o'clock at night, it was pitch black, there was badgers, there was a couple of deers, there was an owl at one point. I was like, oh, an owl, you very rarely see them. And I did see one the other day at the Arboretum because they had a bird of prey exhibition as well, which was thoroughly enjoyable. The things that man did with a bit of chicken on the end of a string. Anyway, at some point when I'm driving on my own, a voice in my head will go, don't look in the wing mirror, don't look in the rearview mirror, don't look at... Does anybody else get this? I'm like, oh... It's the devil clown. He's in the back seat, isn't it? I must have watched a film when I was young where a clown popped up in a back seat of somebody's car late at night, and now I can't get out of my head when I'm driving back from Wales at 2 a.m. I can't look in the back seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst thing is you're about to wake up and find out you're still in that car.
That's it.
Just dream.
I've been hit Cardiff. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's, I tell you what, though, I am, having gone from a point where I never thought I'd be on stage again, because I didn't know how I was going to do it, to doing this tour, I'm so loving being on stage.
That's great.
It's so, I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, the audiences are hating it, but I'm not, the audiences are great, but I'm having so much fun
because it feels, after the last couple of years, it feels a lot purer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no expectation attached to it for me. All I want to do is go out and make people laugh. That is it. I go from day to like tour date to tour date to tour date, and very much live in the present with it. And I'm so much happier on stage, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And I'm good. Yeah, it's good.
That was Zoe Lyons. Now it's time for the final guest for this compilation, or I like to call it compilation, because that's how excited I am by all of the guests. Someone who's been on with his ex-partner in crime, first time on his own, lovely guy. Remember, Adam Buxton is going to be on in 2024, but this is his ex-double act, still friend, well, that's weird, Joe Cornish.
Do you have any clear childhood memories that simply can't be true? I have a memory. I'll tell you my two. One is going out into my back garden and Saturn being in the sky the size of the moon.
Yes.
I remember that happening.
Yes.
Another time, this might have been a trick. My sister did, but she did it. It was amazing. She pretended to prick herself, or I remember pricking herself on her leg and blue blood coming out of her veins.
Well, isn't it true that blood can be different colours depending on... Isn't it? No. I thought it can be different colours depending on which part of the body it's in.
No.
Maybe your parents dyed her blood blue because they wanted to be more posh.
Maybe.
A little bit of quink.
Did you have any... Could be.
Quink.
Do you have anything like that? Do you remember?
No, I've had nightmares. I had nightmares as a child that I can vividly remember as if they were real. A man with a wolf's head and red Y fronts stepping into my room, literally, when I was a kid. And that can't be real, can it? I mean, the red Y fronts, yes, that's within the realm of possibility. But the wolf's head, no.
Yeah, that's quite scary.
No, I don't think so.
Do you think the Jupiter thing's possible, that I possibly went out and saw, or Saturn, wherever it was? The rings.
What is it? Explain it again, please.
I went into the garden and there was, in the sky, there was the ringed planets. Which one's that? Saturn? Yeah. That was an easy one. But that one was beneath you. Like the size of the moon in the sky, and I was in the back. But like, why would I be in the back garden at night time?
Yeah, that's not possible. Unless you, I don't know. No, that's not possible.
No. I remember it.
Unless you had a bit of grit in your eye that somehow adjusted the power of your eyes for a millisecond. Yeah.
Sometimes the moon looks really big, though, right? So
it
could
yes,
be...
it does. It always looks very big in films, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like
in America, is it really that big?
When I was in America, when I was 18 or 19, I think this is true. The moon on the horizon just looked about five times bigger than it would.
Yeah. Usually.
It was massive. So I think it does. It happens in America because America's closer to the moon. Probably. That's probably what it is. You've been there. You know what it's
that.
Like. Right. We'll do one more. I won't ask you the OGs, so I've promised one that didn't work out very
the
well.
The what?
It doesn't matter. What tune would you sing, Oh Jesus, I Have Promised? Do you remember the hymn, Oh Jesus, I Have Promised?
No, no. So yeah, don't
That's
worry about
why it's
that
not
one.
A good question. There's like this four
We
different...
did a thing, Adam once did a thing on the radio show where like you quite often find, like I went to a memorial the other day for a relative who'd passed away, and there was a hymn I just had never heard in my life before. So you just have to riff it, right? And they're quite easy to riff a hymn is fairly easy because they're all about the same. And they do this and they do that and then they end again.
Yeah.
They're mostly all like that,
they are,
aren't
that's
they?
Good. But thank you.
You just have to stay half a beat behind the person next to you.
And you get a little clue in the intro is usually like a little away... Way in.
That's right. They give you the verse chorus.
They give you a little clue.
That's true.
I tell you, the song that has the best intro that I didn't realise.
Yes.
I just heard it on the radio the other day. The Wombles of Wimbledon Common Away.
You know, isn't that amazing? I was going to wait for you to finish what you were going to say.
Yeah.
And then I was about to say, well, the song with the best intro ever is the Wombles. It's got the longest, the most notes. That's a shitload of notes.
It is. And it's sort of nothing to do with what comes.
We should be friends.
I've really thought about that quite a lot.
I just heard it when that is the most amazing yeah. piece of music.
You look a bit like a Womble. Only because of the hair. What Womble does Richard look the most like? Orinoco?
I like Tom.
Uncle Bulgaria. Uncle Bulgaria.
Tobermory.
Uncle Bulgaria.
Madame Cholet, as
Uncle
sweet as Gabby.
Bulgaria. We can, he can remember, who can remember the times when he wasn't behind the times.
With his map of the world, pick up the paper.
Let's talk about omelettes.
It's great. I want to try and get the intro to the Womble song into the charts, but not the rest
it
of the
Womble.
It
would be a good
song.
Sample for Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
it's
it?
It's like on really funky brass instruments or something. Some like umpar.
It's not
I think
funky.
It's maybe on those big...
It's never going to be funky.
It's like a weird... It's good.
Thanks for listening to our first compilation of the best of 2023. We are back tomorrow with a whole lot more. So tune in then, or if you're not listening to this on the day it was released, just you could probably go and listen to the next one straight away.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.